Matos is the principal in Chicago. Anyone not know?
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Here we go. Mrs. Matos is here from Chicago. She's an educator for decades and is as much sought after as her insight and advice. She's a keynote speaker at our annual Women's Wellness 2 years ago. We are grateful that she's here tonight to inform us. okay. To inform us about relationships, how to improve relationships between people.
Okay, thank you so much, Esty, and it really is very much my pleasure, and it's been so wonderful to spend the last 3, 4, 5 days here, and another few yet to come, so it's been just wonderful. I feel like, I told some of you, I feel like I'm playing hooky every day that I'm here, because I'm away from my school, but it's a wonderful hooky to be playing, so it is quite nice to be back here in Denver, and I do want to add a very special note of thanks to Sarah Halpern, who's done so much to facilitate everything I needed. And been there all the way through, and to Esty, who also is such a pleasure to work with and has just made our stay so wonderful and comfortable here, and to Joyce for every little piece, including this morning's last-minute phone call. Joyce, can you get me some supplies before my workshop? And she did. They were ready for me, so thank you so, so much. Okay, our topic tonight, relationships. And to begin, I'd like to go back to the first relationship that ever existed in the world. That would be the relationship between Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve. And obviously, preceding that relationship, there was one human being who walked the planet Earth, just Adam himself, Adam HaRishon, first man. And the pasuk tells us, "Vayitzar Hashem Elokim es Adam afra min ha'adama." God created this man, and he vayipach b'av nishmas chaim. He breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. He gave from his own very own godly essence into man, and took the combination of earth, the earthiness, the physicality, the gashmius, the materialistic part of us, combined that with the spirit, put that into one human being named Adam. And the Gemara actually asks us, Lama nivra ha'adam yachidi, why was man created as one human being? Why were there not two human beings at the very same time? Why not both man and wife, Adam and Chava, together? And the Gemara gives a few answers. The one I'd like to focus on is the second one, where it tells us, "L'hagid gidula sosha kadosh baruch hu," to show us the greatness of God. Why? And it gives a mashal, gives a parable. When a person mints coins, every single coin that comes out in exactly the same mold, exactly the same form, exactly the same shape, and no two coins are different, and I go back to remembering when we were here 16 years ago, and my daughter was about 9 years old, and she insisted that we should go to the Denver Mint. Don't you have a mint here? You did then, 16 years ago, okay. It was a boiling hot summer day. We waited 2 hours. I don't know if you still have to wait that long to get into the Denver Mint, but apparently money is a very interesting commodity, and she really wanted to go, and I was being a very good mother, because at night I was giving classes, in the morning I was giving classes, so in the afternoon we were going to the Denver Mint, and we sat there, waited and waited, patiently returned, we got into the Denver Mint, and watched from up there on top, and if I remember correctly, and my memory may not serve me correctly, they were producing at that time $6 million in pennies. $6 million a week in pennies. Does that sound doable here? I don't know. That's what I remember from 16 years ago. Anyways, and we stood on top. I'm sure many of you have been to the Denver Mint. Stood on top, looked down that glass window, and all you saw was this conveyor belt with money just rolling off, right? And every single one of those pennies was exactly identical. And so the Gemara, the Talmud tells us that that is what happens when man uses a mold to imprint something. And yet God used one mold as well, the mold of Adam HaRishon, of the first man, and he made every successive human being that would ever walk the planet Earth, the billions and billions of us that have been in existence since the beginning of time, and no two people are ever identical. No two people. And you look at it and you think about it, Hashem uses the same mold. He used the same mold. There's a head, there's a neck, there's a torso, 2 arms, 10 fingers, 2 legs, 10 toes, nose, eyes, mouth, ears. Everybody has, if they're born, hopefully, with all of their body parts, everybody has all of those body parts, and yet, no two people have ever been the same. And the Gemara tells us, "Kashem she'ein parts ufan domim," just like their faces are not the same, "kach ein deoseam shavos," their abilities, their strengths, their thought processes are not the same either. And what we see from here is that God could, and that is the greatness of God, that God could use one form, one mold, so to speak, of Adam, and yet no two people are the same. And the Talmud concludes that to say, "Lefichach chayav kal echad ve'echad lomar." Therefore, every human being must say, "Bishvili nivra ha'olam." The world was created for me. In other words, one person equaled the entire universe. The entire universe with everything in it, mountains and oceans and skies and stars and moons and everything in the world was created for the existence of one human being. And therefore, every human being successively is supposed to understand that although Hashem wanted to populate the world now with millions and billions of people, each one of us is so precious, is so valuable to God Himself, that it would have been worth creating an entire universe for each one of us. Now, that does not mean to say that we should walk around with our heads held high and who knows what, but it does mean to say that every person needs to have a sense of self. Every person needs to understand that I am a person with my own strengths, with my own capabilities, with my own particular talents, with my own particular character traits, and I am a somebody that needs to use my strengths, my abilities, with confidence to impact on this world that I am in. And so Hashem said, if there would have been two people in the world, even just two, that understanding of Bishvili Nivra Olam, and it was worth creating an entire universe just for me, would have been diminished, because there's not one person, now there are two people. So for two hours on the sixth day of creation, Adam was one solitary human being. Until the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God wanted him to understand, Adam, this isn't the way man is supposed to be. Lo tov heyos Adam levado. It is not good for man to be alone in the world. As Selo Ezer Kenegdo, I am going to make him a helpmate. He is going to have a companion. He is going to have a partner, a spouse, who is Kenegdo, who is equal and equivalent to him in his abilities, in his strengths, in his wisdom. The woman will be an able, willing, capable partner to this man. And let us put them together in As Selo Ezer Kenegdo. But in order for that woman to come into creation, man first had to recognize that a whole parade of animals had to be paraded in front of him. All the animals in the world, the leopards and the lions and the storks and the eels and I don't know what, every species of animal in the world was paraded before Adam. He gave them all names. By giving them names, he was understanding and identifying the essence of every animal, and he was realizing, L'kulam yish ben zug v'li ein ben zug. All of them have a spouse, all of them have a partner, all the animals were created, male and female, and I stand alone, li ein ben zug. There is nobody for me. And when he realized his inadequacy, when he realized that he needed somebody else and he wanted a companion, that is when God said, okay, now you're ready. Now I will create a woman. Now she will be the Ezer Kenegdo. But let's look for a moment at this statement that God makes, Lo Toveo Sadam Vado, it is not good for man to be alone. Now, so obviously God understood quite well from the very beginning that he was not planning to leave man alone, and that's what we need to understand. This was not a change of heart and not a change of mind. It was, as the Gemara says to us, in order to enable man to be filled with that sense of self, that self-identity, that self-importance, that self-confidence, and now we can go on and create two people. But interestingly enough, the Medrash tells us something which some of you may be familiar with. If you've never heard it, it's going to sound rather interesting, or rather strange, shall I say. The Medrash tells us that there is a very strong shita, one theory that says that du partsufim nivru, man was actually a composite of the male and female components in one. And when God said, "Es Elo Ezer Kenegdo," I will now separate these two people within one body with both male and female characteristics, du partsufim, two faces. One in front, one in back. That must have been an interesting 2 hours. Can you imagine being male and female within one, together with your husband in one body like that? And, okay, honey, so where are we going? Well, I'm going out to work. I don't know about you. Well, I know who's taking care of the kids because I'm going out to work. Here we are, going together, right? And we're one and the same. And Hashem said, no. As Elo Ezer Kenegdo, I am now going to separate you. And some of the commentaries explain that in addition to God wanting one solitary human being in the world, there's another component here, and that is they both had to be created from one chomer, from one form, from one set of ingredients, if you will. They had to be one before they could be separated so they would ever be able to come back and rejoin each other in harmony. Because imagine what we know about the difference between the male and female makeup. We know there is such vast differences in every aspect of male and female. Imagine if they would not have been created from one chomer, from one body, from one unit. Imagine if they indeed would have been two completely separate entities, and then let's bring them back into a relationship. That would have been almost impossible. As it is, sometimes we feel like it's what? You know, when the husband says, and you're, I used this example, I believe, before, but it's my favorite example because I don't know about you, but I think it exists in a lot of couples where the wife says, I'm so tired, I can't, I don't know what to do anymore, I'm so tired. And what is the husband's response? Well, honey, just go to sleep. Just go lay down for an hour. And you're like, I can't lay down, you don't understand what I have to do. I have this, and she rattles off her list, and the husband's like, well, you said you're tired, so go to sleep. And the wife is like, no, you just don't get it, do you? So there's the male-female piece right there. The male needs the solution, the female needs to kvetch. Let's be straight, up front. We like to kvetch sometimes, and you're allowed to. Once in a while, you're allowed to have a meltdown. Once in a while, you're allowed to kvetch your husband, right? But we kind of need to do that, and men need to find the solution. So if we were not created from the same one entity, it would have been a very difficult job indeed for us to reunite and to actually create a relationship. And the commentaries say that man is midini b'teva, he is naturally a social being, v'tzarich yoser el ha'ava, and he needs love, and he needs companionship. And therefore, if you look at the difference between man and every other species of animal, the species of animals, what they, except for the rare exceptions, and that is the comparison between Israel, the people of Israel, and the dove, because a dove mates for life. But with the rare exception of very few species, an animal comes, mates with its spouse, with its partner, whatever it is, goes on its way, and never the twain shall meet. They're done, they're finished, they don't need each other. We need relationships. We need a spouse, a companion, a person, somebody to connect to. That is so important for us as human beings. And that's how we were created. And so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in this way, so that Lo Tovio Sadam Levado, God said, I need to separate you because it is much better for you to be two separate individuals. And again, it wouldn't have been so much fun to carry your husband around in front or the wife around on the back all day long, right? And Hashem said, it is better for you to be two separate individuals. And when I think about it, which would have been the easier relationship? Which would have been the easier relationship? If we were indeed still united, joined like that, I mean, we can't even begin to imagine it. But then what you're doing for your husband, you're doing for yourself, because, you know, whatever it is, we're doing together. So that would have been the easier relationship. And Hashem said, uh-uh. God said, uh-uh, we're not taking the easy way out here in life. Relationships need to be built. Relationships need to be created. Relationships need to be about you seeing the next person who isn't part of yourself intrinsically, and making that person part of yourself. Whether it's the marriage relationship where we know there's actually that ishto kegufo joining together a husband and wife in a complete union and complete unit, or whether it's other relationships that we are all involved in on a daily basis, a relationship with a coworker, a relationship with an employer, a relationship with a mother-in-law. I don't do mother-in-law jokes anymore, just by the way. Once you become a mother-in-law, you don't do those anymore. But, you know, but your mother-in-law, your sister-in-law, your sister, relationships are all around us. And we need to know what it means and what it takes to form that relationship. Let's look at another relationship at the beginning of time and at the beginning of Sefer Bereishis. Not such a happy one. The first siblings in the world, Cain and Hevel. Okay, so anyone who's got two siblings that go at each other, just look at Cain and Hevel and say, we're pretty okay, you know? Cain and Abel, okay? Cain and Hevel. And here's Cain, the oldest son, and he brings the first korban, the first offering, the first sacrifice to God, but somehow in his distorted mind, which the commentaries explain, this isn't the time for it, but in his distorted mind, he brings the squishiest, most rotten fruit he can possibly come up with from his vast acreage of land, and that's what he brings as his offering to God. And God rejects his offering. He's, you want me to accept, you want me to bless you and your efforts, and you are somehow thinking that by bringing me the most rotten, disgusting, squishy, moldy bananas, I'm going to bless you. It's not happening, Cain. And Cain stands by and watches as his brother Abel brings the choicest, fattest, blue ribbon, county fair winning sheep and ox and brings them as an offering. And there it goes. The fire comes down, descends from heaven, takes that carbon immediately. And Cain is filled with rage, anger, embarrassment, shame, and plain old jealousy. And Cain actually thinks, according to the commentaries, if you wouldn't have bought such a nice carbon, mine would have been accepted. That's like saying, if you wouldn't have made the nicest platter of sushi around, for the ladies event at Aish, and I would have just brought in a few, you know, a little platter of grapes. Everybody would have thought mine was the best around. Not really. You know, if you're asked to bring something for the ladies' event, you don't bring a few little grapes, you know, one little cluster of grapes, and no one's going to exactly compliment you on that one, are they? Whether or not someone else brings sushi, your little grapes are not getting complimented. They're not winning the blue ribbon at the Aish event. Not happening, right? But Kayan is so consumed by himself and his need for mastery in the world and control, because Kayan needs control. And he needs everybody to acknowledge him. And he needs what he is to be that. And even though God says to him, this is so incredible, because God says to Kayan, he says to him, listen, lama charalach v'lama naful panacha. What are you angry about? What are you embarrassed about? Let me tell you something, Kayan. Hello, im seitiv. Say, Ace, I'm giving you another chance. If you do better, you will be on top. Your sin will be forgiven. You will be raised up on top. V'im lo seitiv, I want to tell you something, Kayan. If you don't do better, la pesach hatas rovetz. Let me explain something to you. This is not about your brother. This is about you. And every person you will meet in life, you will find fault with and a way to put him down, to be jealous of him, if you don't work on yourself. And think about that. There are some people who go through life thinking, it's all about everyone else. If she wouldn't be so this, and if he wouldn't be so that, and if that one wouldn't be this, and that one wouldn't be this, the only one they don't look at as is themselves. And that's what God said to him, Kayan, this is about you. And you've got to work it through yourself and learn how to relate to people, because if you don't, it'll be everyone you meet in life. And what happens? The very next verse. How painful and sad is that? Kayan can't do it. He can't do it. He doesn't want to do it. And the very next pasuk tells us that he goes out and goes out to the field with Hevel. He takes him out on some pretense. Let's go for a walk. And he kills him in the field, the very first murder. And unfortunately, since then, murder has just gotten bigger and better and more sophisticated. But that was the very first murder that came from a relationship that could have been, that could have been a wonderful one. And instead, Kayan chose to self-promote and turn everything upside down. Two relationships. Two different kinds of relationships, signifying so much about the many different relationships we have in life. I'm going to take questions later. I'll be more than happy to take questions. Please remember your questions. Okay. If you want some paper, I'll give it to you right now. Okay. And when we come back to Adam and Chava and we understand Adam and Eve and what this was all about, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the Torah tells us, Al ken yazov ish es aviv es imo, a man leaves his parents, v'davak v'ishto, he should cleave to his wife, v'hayu l'basar echad, and they become one, which the Ramban, Nachmanides, explains to mean, v'hayu l'basar echad, they become one unit, they become one relationship. They become so close and so loving and so respectful of each other that they are closer than any other family relationship. And I tell my students, by the way, 12th graders, I say, you can't imagine at this point, because they can't. You know, you're leaving your parents, and that's what the pasuk says, you know. You're leaving your family, you're leaving your parents, and you're going off with this young man that you know for how long? How long do you know him for? I don't care if you know him for 6 months. How long do you know this young man for? Even if you know him for 2 years. How long do you, and you're leaving the family that raised you, that loves you, that nurtured you, and you're going off into the wild blue yonder with this young man who you barely know, let's face it. And there you are. And v'hayu basar echad. But using the relationship and using the tools to create and to build a relationship, you can become one unit that is so close, that is so one, that it becomes the most intimate relationship that could exist in the world. But let's look for a moment at how the secular world views this relationship and indeed relationships in general. And let's look at the prophet Bilam, who represents the nations of the world, and he was in and of himself an anomaly. He was a man who wanted greatness and yet was so immoral and so depraved in his approach to morality that it was impossible. He was a walking human conflict. That's what he was. I don't know how else to describe him. So Bilam, it comes out to bless the Jewish people, and he says, I'm only going to do what God says. God won't let me curse. I won't curse. Sure, underneath every blessing is a hidden curse that unfortunately came out as the Jews went through their exiles and sinned. And all the blessings have this surface under the surface, like, I'm going to get you, Jews, but I'll bless you. Okay, so part of what he said, he gives the verse that tells us, Mimana Afra Yaakov Misparas Rova Yisrael, who can count the amount of mitzvos that the Jewish people in the land of Israel do with the land? Who can count? In other words, there's so many people of Israel who are people of agriculture, right? And they went into the land of Israel. We just read in last week's Sedra and last week's Parsha how they went into the land and how they're dividing up their inheritances, and they're all going to have to farm the land, and there are so many commandments they have to do with tithing, with the masers, with the trumos, with the Shemitah year that we are presently in the midst of, the sabbatical year for the ground, letting the ground grow. So he says, I'm looking at these people and they are so unusual, because even when they plant and they farm, they find so many commandments to keep. The second half of the pasuk is Umisparas Rov Yisrael. Who can count the zera, the sperm that comes out of the intimate relationship between a husband and wife? That's what Bilam says. And the Medrash says on that, what did Bilam mean? Bilam said that the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made, we learn from here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev Sofer Revi Yosan Shal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits and watches the relationship, the intimate relationship between a husband and wife, and he waits to see which intimate relationship will produce a child, that a great person will be created from. Which union will bring about the creation of a new life, of a new life that will join the ranks of the Jewish people and bring greatness to the Jewish people, bring greatness in keeping the commandments of God, bring greatness in the learning of the Torah, which is the next child that will be conceived like this. And Bilam was quite taken aback when he saw this in his prophecy. And he said, Misha Tahar Umisharsev Tori Mitoshim, God who is so pure, and God whose angels are so pure, Yatzitz B'davarzeh, that's what God's doing. He's sitting and watching this intimate relationship between a husband and wife. How appropriate is that? And Bilam mocked God. He mocked God and he looked down at, and he thought this was really strange and bizarre that God should be interested in the intimate relationships between husbands and wives. And he mocked him. And as a result, he became blind in one eye. We find later on in the portion of the week that he became Neuma Gevashisuma Ayin, he became blind in one eye. So our commentaries explain this. What's going on here? What is happening? Bilam, on one hand, is exclaiming over the fact that God is watching this intimate relationship. On the other hand, he's like, whoa, this is ridiculous. Like, what is going on here? And the commentaries explain that it is because of Bilam's three character traits that he was not able to see holiness in marriage, and that these three character traits indeed can undermine and destroy any marriage and any other relationship as well. Let's look at what these character traits are, because the Mishnah in Avos tells us any person who has these three character traits is from the students of Avram Avinu, our patriarch Abraham. Any three who have the opposite are from Bilam HaRasha, the students of Bilam HaRasha. The three character traits are, Bilam's were, the negative ones, Ayin Ra'ah, a negative outlook and looking at somebody without being able to let him have the benefit of the doubt, finding the good, but instead looking at it in a very critical, negative way. Always looking for, oh, you're this or you're that, and not being willing to see the good in another person. Not being willing to see that the other person has so much to offer and there's so much in the totality of this person. Instead nitpicking on the little things and being jealous of what the other person is. So I don't fargin, and we were trying to figure out a translation for the word fargin. I still haven't come up with it. To any help from the audience? Fargin? To? It's Yiddish, but I. To what? To be happy for the next person and allow them to have what they have without me looking at it with jealousy, without me looking at it like, oh, yeah, right, so she's like this, but you know what else? She's da-da-da. If she would only, whatever it is, and pointing out the negative flaws of the person. That's the ayin ra. That's the approach of the evil eye, the person who looks at it with just that negativity. That's the first destructive midah of Bilam. The second one was ruach givoha. He was a very egotistic, high, ruach givoha literally means he held his head high. He felt like he was better than everybody else. And the person who feels like they are better than anybody else cannot really go into a relationship in a way that that relationship is going to be a real relationship. Because it's always about, I know what I'm doing. Okay, maybe I need someone else in my life. I might need a spouse. I might need a body here. I might need somebody else. But it's all about me. Because I know what I'm doing. I've got it all down. I'm pretty okay. I don't really need anybody else in my life. And you can all listen to me and I'll tell you what to do and that's okay. And that everything revolves around me in this case. And then we have the nefesh rechava, the person who is greedy and wants and wants and wants. And Bilam represented all of these because if you recall, when the messengers of the king came to summon him to go and bless the Jewish people, curse the Jewish people actually, Bilam said, if I get an entire palace full of gold and silver, I still, right, meaning, I want that. Give me some money. I'm okay. You fill your palace. And he said, I want your house, he said, you, the king of Moab. If you give me your palace full of gold and silver, I'll think about coming to curse those people. Right? So Bilam is greedy. Bilam wants it all. Bilam wants to live and indulge himself, his desires, what he wants. And if we think about it, these three character traits are the three most central character traits that will destroy the possibility for a real relationship. Think about it. A person who's always nitpicking, always criticizing, always looking for what the other person is doing that's wrong, not respecting, not trusting that the other person, the spouse, the sister-in-law, the co-worker knows what they're doing and they're working on it and maybe they're not perfect but they're trying to get to a place where they're in a good place. No. It's always, okay, let's... It's always out there to slam, to smash. That's the ayin ra'a. And then we come to the person who thinks he knows it all. How well does that go in a relationship? The person who knows it all. You have a coworker, anything you do is they're the person. They always have a lot to say. They always know everything. They can say it all. They know what they're doing, right? And in a marriage, a person who feels like, I'm better than you, and you just listen to me, and again, this can spiral down into a very controlling spouse, because it's all about me, and it's all about what I need, it's all about what I'm doing, it's all about, right? And then we come to the person who's greedy, the person who's out for his own good. It's about my indulgence, it's about what I need. My needs need to be met, it's about me. And that person, there's actually a pasuk in Mishlei and Proverbs that says, a person who wants his desires met wants to be alone. He can't really be in a relationship because it's about him. So if it's about me, and a relationship is all about the mutual good of the two people in the relationship. All about that. If it's only about me and it's not about the mutual good of our relationship, it's about what I want. So this is where I want to go on vacation, and so that's just how it's going to be. So, okay, if you want to come along, and this kind of person will just say, well, if you don't want to come, that's okay, I'll just go myself. Nice, that's a real relationship, right? That's not about what can we do for the mutual good of a couple, of workers working in the same place of employment, what can we do as a team, what can we do to bring this together? No, it's about me, and this is what I need. And the story I've used to illustrate this is a famous story about Rabbi Aryeh Levine, who was a great rabbi in probably the turn of the century in Israel, in the Yeshiva Yeshan, the old established city of Jerusalem at the turn of the century in the 1900s, who was a very, very great man with a heart as big as anything, who visited prisoners and went to the hospitals when there were cases of leprosy still in those days, not the kind that is written about in the Torah, but people were very, very sick and he would, contagious illnesses, he would go to visit those people and go to the prisons and round up all the prisoners and speak to them and strengthen them. This is Rabbi Aryeh Levine, a heart as big as anything. And Rabbi Aryeh Levine once went with his wife to a doctor and he said to the doctor, Doctor, our foot is hurting us. His wife's foot was hurting him. Our foot is hurting us. And I always say that this person over here, when I broke my shoulder a few years ago, and my husband was so kind and sensitive and so didn't know what to do with himself and how to help his poor unfortunate wife who broke her shoulder and was in a lot of pain, he said, our shoulder hurts us. And I said, no, it doesn't. My shoulder hurts me. Thank you very much, but I can't hear that right now. So I was not as good as Rabbi Aryeh Levine, who I'm sure appreciated her husband's efforts greatly, but I did not at that moment. I was just too filled with pain to, okay, I know you care about me, but right now I just need to be in pain. So let me have my pain and don't tell me you're in pain because you're not. Okay. So, you know, it's like the husband in the delivery room with his wife, right? That's lots of fun, right? And so they're sitting there, and you're like, and really the truth is, the poor guy, he doesn't know what to do with himself. They're falling all over themselves, not knowing what to do with themselves in their poor life, right? Nothing for him to do but be there for you. But you, it's like you are alone in that moment. They could be there, they could be supportive. Ice chips, all the things they tell you, and all the not good. Okay, fine. But anyways, when it comes down to it, you're the one going through the labor, right? So, but this idea of understanding that a relationship is about using the very opposite, the ayin tova. What caring so much, our patriarch Abraham, what would do anything for anybody, for those Arab wayfarers on the third day of his bris milah, in his pain, in his old age, in the blazing hot sun. Avraham Avinu is looking, what, and he's looking at these Arab, dirty, bedraggled, dusty wayfarers. What can I do for you? Because anything, and looking for the good. And I'm saying, oh my gosh, can you imagine some of us would be saying, I don't want those guys in my house. They look a little too dirty for me. That wasn't Avraham. There was an Ayin Tova. Okay, maybe they're dirty and dusty, but we could take care of that. That's okay. You know, we'll deal. It was an Ayin Tova. What can I do for you? Let me get the best for you. He runs to get the choicest meats and to shech three cows, not one. So he could give them each a portion of tongue. Okay? And he's, and what can I do? And always looking to give more and to look for the good. And how can I do it? And what can I say? And I think that if we could really employ this Ayin Tova in our relationships, this ability to see things in a good light, for some people it comes very, very naturally. Some people are just born wearing those rose-colored glasses, right? And those of us who aren't say, oh, she's just wearing rose-colored glasses. Come on, she doesn't see reality. She doesn't get it. I know reality, so just don't give me this rose-colored business stuff, right? We kind of push it away because we're not there, you know? But I'm sure all of us know a person like that who is so brimming with positivity and goodwill and happiness. Makes you feel like $1 million from the biggest to the littlest, from it, right? And just you just meet them and they're like, don't know. Your children are so yummy. They're like, I just want to kiss them. You know, and you're like, sounds a little... If it would be anyone else, you'd think it was fake. But you know she really means it, so you accept it from her. But some of us don't have that. We're not born with those natural set of rose-colored glasses. Our glasses are the shades of gray or, you know, the sunglass type, you know, darker sunglasses. So what do we do about that? And really, it takes a lot of good, hard work to say, I need to work on myself. What am I going to see in this person, in this situation, that is an Ayin Tova? Because we have to believe, and we do believe, that there is good in every person. And there is good in every relationship. And we do need to work on this and see it in a different way. I just read in a book that was written by a Rav in Israel, it was such a humorous story. I mean, not humorous, it's pretty sad, tongue-in-cheek, I guess, humorous. This man apparently deals with a lot of couples who come to him. And a couple, young couple came to him, they had been married 2 years, and they each come in, and the husband tells his side of the story, and the husband says, she doesn't do anything I want. She will do nothing for me. All she does is follow the way her mother did things. Whatever her mother did, that's what she does. And me, forget about it. I don't exist in her world. It's just about whatever her mother did, that's how it goes. And the wife comes in and says, he is so ungrateful. I do everything I can for him, and he doesn't ever show me any gratitude. Nothing. I can do the nicest things for him, and he doesn't show me any gratitude. So the rabbi's a little puzzled. He's like, okay, let's start over again. He says, man, can you give me some examples? So he says, well, I'll just give you one example. He says, the example is about chocolate cake. This is the example. What's the example? He says, every Shabbos, she makes chocolate cake. It's a very, you know, one of these babkas oozing chocolate type of thing. I happen to like those, but I guess this man did. He said, I don't like chocolate cake. And every Shabbos, because her mother makes chocolate cake, we get chocolate cake. Did she ever ask me whether I like chocolate cake? No. Did she ever ask me what I want? No. It's all about her mother, her mother, her mother, her mother. Okay. Then he says to the wife, so what is it that shows you that your husband is very ungrateful? And she says, you know what? I go out of my way to make him this chocolate cake. She goes, mind you, they're coming in separately. But the chocolate cake seems to figure very powerfully. She says, when we were engaged, he came over, my husband came over to the house, and my mother baked this yummy chocolate cake, this babka chocolate cake, and he praised it and he raved about it to the skies. So I make the same chocolate cake every Shabbos. He has never thanked me for the chocolate cake. So he's like, do we hear something? Is it funny? It's like, it's funny, but a couple's really coming to him about this, about this chocolate cake. Okay, they were each claiming it was only one example. obviously what we're hearing here is a total lack of communication, total break. So he says to the man, he says, so why didn't you ever tell her that you would prefer if she makes a cream cake, a vanilla cake, a lemon rose pie, I don't know what, why didn't you ever tell her? And the man says, I'm not going to talk about food, that's like so demeaning, like why would I? And the rabbi's thinking, you're not going to talk about food, but you're coming, your whole shalom bias, and you're talking about divorce because of a chocolate cake, but you won't talk about food. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So then he says, you know, and he says to the wife, did you ever ask your husband what kind of cake? No, but of course I knew because he loved it at my mother. You know, he loved it at my mother's house because what's he supposed to do when he's a groom and comes into the potential mother-in-law's house, right? He either likes it or the chocolate cake gets thrown in his face, I guess, right? So anyways, but here, obviously, it almost like highlighted to me the almost the minute, minuscule things that somehow creep up in a relationship. They're so tiny. I think this story is just indicative of so much more, because we all have the chocolate cakes in our lives, don't we? I mean, a lot of us like chocolate cakes, so we don't have the chocolate cakes, but maybe our husbands do, or our coworkers do, or whoever they are. They have the chocolate cakes in their lives because we all have these minuscule small things that somehow highlight to us this terrible fault or flaw of our husbands, of our friends, of whoever it is. All of a sudden, this is all really, whatever it is. And if we are able to look at it with an ayin tova, and we're able to look at it in a different way, is he really so ungrateful? Does he really never think about any? You know what I'm saying? Look at it, the bigger picture of it. We always need to look at the bigger picture. And we need to look at what is the good I do see. And the example I give, and I've given and I illustrate this example, which reflects very badly on me, but I hope you'll forgive me for that one. And that is that my husband wakes up very early in the morning to learn. And sets his alarm clock, but he always wakes up a good half hour before the alarm clock rings because he doesn't want it to wake me up. Now, that's a very caring, considerate husband, right? The alarm clock, unfailingly, he's up. You know how it is when you can't sleep because you don't want the alarm clock to wake anybody up? So he does that every morning. Well, one morning, 5:15 in the morning, his alarm clock rings, loud, blaring ring, and I'm like barely able to open my eyes. I squint at the clock, and it says 5:15, 5 o'clock, whatever it was, and I was like, this guy is so insensitive. Why doesn't he realize that I went to sleep so late last night and he didn't care about that? And he left as he apparently had left before he left the house, before 5:15. Since he was up the extra half hour early, he often would just turn it off and then leave. This time he forgot to turn it off. So alarm clock went off. I had to stumble out of bed to go turn off his alarm clock. I was very not happy right then and there. And then I said to myself, okay, lady, why don't you like reframe this a little bit? Think about what this is. Instead of looking at it with the ayin ra'ah, how insensitive, how uncaring. This is the first time it ever happened in all the years that he has been setting his alarm clock, number one. And it has never happened since, just by the way. Number two, I guess he got scared that time. You know? And number two, I said, why don't you think of how lucky you are that your husband wants to get up early to learn? Like, that's pretty commendable that he's up at 5 o'clock in the morning to learn, right? Why isn't that something special to you? Why are you looking at the bad and the wrong and the negative instead of looking at the good and instead of looking at what this means? So that paradigm shift really, really made a difference to me. The reframing of the very same thing that happened, the alarm clock went off. I was still up. I was still not happy about being up. I'll never be able to fall asleep. Of course I did, but okay, you know how you feel when you're all grumbling and angry and I don't know what, I'll never fall asleep again. And there I was asleep as soon as my head fit in at the pillow. But so the ayin ra'ah, and listen, let's face it, none of us are perfect, and our relationships are far from perfect. We are not perfect, our husbands are not perfect, our coworkers, our mothers-in-law, nobody's perfect. We all, this is about a journey and a process where we're working on ourselves to be better people. But the ayin tova allows us to see the good rather than focusing on the bad. And the ruach nemuch of our patriarch Abraham, the person who's self-effacing, doesn't mean they don't have self-confidence. Doesn't mean they don't have that ani, because we said earlier, you need to have a strong sense of self, that identity. I'm an important person. I have a lot to contribute. I have confidence. I have strength. I am a valuable human being. That has to be there. But together with that has to be a ruach nemucha. You don't always have to have things your way. That's the ruach nemucha. It's not about me. It's not about what I want. That's not where we're at. I can let go. I can give in. I can communicate instead of just storming out of them and saying, you just don't understand. You just don't understand. You don't get it. So forget it. Forget this conversation, right? That's the person who's like, okay, I know better than he does, I know better than this person does, and I'm just going to get out of here because this person has nothing to contribute to this conversation that will help us and will be meaningful. It just won't, right? And you know what? Obviously, disagreements happen in any relationship. If it is a real relationship, there are going to be disagreements. Unless you are living a very superficial life with a very superficial relationship, you're two different people, coming from two different backgrounds, coming from two different points of view, man and woman, as we said, from a masculine and feminine point of view. And this I saw for the first time when I was preparing for this lecture. I thought it was such a phenomenal thought. It was that when God separated us, these two halves of the man-woman combination, he separated male and female characteristics. He could have given us each half of what this human being had. One would have the vision, the other one would have the hearing. One would have the sense of taste, and one would have the sense of touch. And we would complement each other that way. Imagine how awful that would have been. Obviously, God in his great wisdom saw that we should both be able to see, both be able to hear, both be able to touch, both be able to taste. Right? Isn't that fascinating? I was so fascinated by that. Instead, the way God separated us was that he gave us male characteristics to men and female characteristics to females. And they are just, as we said, so different. And obviously there are some crossover between them. And obviously you have these stereotypes of women, and sometimes the man is the warm, fuzzy one and the emotional, mushy one. And the woman is this, you know, very practical, down to earth, let's get going, forget it, right? Not the nurturing, warm one. But there's the male and female point of view, perspective, characteristics that come in to this male-female combination, right? So, and so there you have this ruach nemucha, this person who's able to give in, able to be self-effacing, able to know I am an important individual, albeit a person who is going to be able to work this out. And it's not all about me. And then the third one, the Baal Taiva, the greedy person, the person who needs to indulge their own needs and their own desires, right? And again, there's a strong overlap between all three, because what happens here is that with all three of these negative midos, character traits, we're talking about a self-absorbed, self-centered person. That is not a person who could be in a relationship on any level that is meaningful. Right? Again, you could occupy the same house as somebody, you could work in the same cubicle office as somebody, you can have a sister-in-law, but this is not a meaningful relationship, it's not a real relationship if one person is. So, what obviously the tendency would be, well, if only my spouse would have heard this tonight, maybe he would be more, you know, or if, you know, they say over that there was once a great Rosh Hashiva who was giving a lecture to the boys. He was giving what's called a Musar Shmuz, you know, on ethics and self-improvement and everything. And he gave a strong, blistering, like, you've got to do it in the way you interact with other people and the way you treat people, da da. And when he finished, one boy turns to the other and says, too bad Shimmy wasn't here tonight. Oh, okay. What does that mean? He really needs to hear the lecture. I don't know, you know. So our tendency would be, so what we have to understand is this is all about us. Certainly, the rest of the people in our lives also need to deal with their relationships, and I'm not saying they do or they don't, but we need to deal with the way we interact with people, with our children, with our spouses, with our in-laws, with everybody in our life, right? Where is my Ayin Tova? How willing am I to look at the good, to build on the good? And we know it. Come on, we all know it. But it's so hard when it comes down to it, and I'm interacting with this child for the 35th time today, that they're nudging me and fetching and I don't know what, and that's it. I'm ready to just, right? What can I do to bring out the positive? What can I do to focus on the positive? What can I do? And yes, as I mentioned in a few lectures on parenting, we do need to educate that child, and we do need to guide them. We do need to give them rules and guidelines and all kinds of things like that. I'm not out there for, you know, no structure parenting. Everything the kid wants is fine. That's not what I'm saying here. But what I am saying is that, can I see the child with an Ayin Tova? Can I see that spouse with an Ayin Tova? Can I look at them with a Ruach Nemucha? It's not all about me and what I need and what makes me tick and what makes me go. And when I can do that, so it's interesting because the commentaries on this Mishnah and Avos say that we are talking about, it says, the person with these good character traits is from the students of Avraham Avinu, our patriarch Abraham. The person who has the negative ones is from the students of, it doesn't say that anywhere else in all of the tractate of Avos. Because the whole Avos is talking about good character traits, and you should do this, you should, you know, emar matva seirbe, don't talk too much, be a person of action rather than a person of a lot of words. But this is the only time it says these are the students of these two people. Because our patriarch Abraham and the prophet Bilam were a total contradiction in terms, they were total opposites. And Rav Matzitzio Solomon, the great mashkiach of the Lakewood Yeshiva, explains that there are two schools in this world, and we attend one of them. He says, let's face it, you're either in the school of our patriarch Abraham or you're in the school of Bilam HaRasha. He says, you're in one of those schools or the other. And if we think about ourselves, it's kind of hard to think of because we all want to be the students of Abraham. And no one wants to be a student of Bilam, but we might have to do a little transferring to a different university and kind of saying, I really want to like move over a little bit and be in that university. He actually calls them, he says, there are two universities in the world. Those are the words Matzio Solomon uses. Two universitaos in Hebrew. Two universities. One is Machon Avraham Avinu, right? Or whatever you want to call it. And the other one is, I don't know what you would call it, Beis Bilam HaRasha, you know, something like that. I don't know what you would call these two universities. The College of Bilam HaRasha, right? Now, let's go back to what we said. Bilam's exclamation or mockery of God. What was Bilam saying? Bilam could not begin to imagine that in a marriage relationship, which obviously includes intimacy, which obviously includes it for, because this is the relationship God designed to bring out the closeness between a husband and wife. The sanctity of a marriage relationship is so concentrated in the relationship of intimacy. And Bilam could not imagine that this relationship could be anything other than his own lust, self-gratification. He did not go into a relationship like that wanting to give to his spouse. He only wanted to take. He only wanted his needs met. He only wanted self-gratification. So to him, there could be no holiness. There could be no sanctity. It was all about the depravity of a man who would take whatever he could get from whoever he could get it. He couldn't see holiness in marriage. He couldn't see sanctity in intimacy. It was not, it didn't exist for him. It wasn't there. So, if we understand that when God created us, v'hayu l'basar echad, I want you to be one relationship, one cohesive unit. Yes, it's going to be a lot of work to take those male-female characteristics, be able to bring them to the table, be able to discuss them, communicate, figure it out, work it together. See it with an eye in Tova, see it with a good eye, see it with a ruach nemucha. It's not all about me, it's about you, it's about the mutual good of a relationship. It's really tough to do that. And if we look at Eish Hayil, the famous poem that King Solomon wrote in tribute to his mother, Bathsheba, and he describes all of the wonderful character traits of women there. And one of them, and this one always stands out for me, he says, Malasu tova lo ra kol yemei chayeha. The wife, in this case talking about a wife, but it could be in any relationship, the wife returns, repays the husband with good and not bad all through her life. In other words, the husband comes in, he's coming home from work one day, and he's had a rough day, and he just plops himself down on the couch, takes up newspaper, mumbles a greeting to his wife, and sits down, starts reading newspaper. And the wife is like, hello? You know, came in after day work. There's like a human being here. That would be me. I've been taking care of the kids all day. It's been a little stressful. Like, hello? Like, see me? See me over here? And he's like, grunts, another grunt over there. And she, what does a wife want to do? What does she want to do? Okay, well, if that's the way you want to treat me, well, I can give back as good as I've got. I can do the same thing. No problem, huh? You go, read your newspaper. Just, and she's, you feel your, like, irritation and annoyance at this spouse who is so uncaring rising, right? And yet, King Solomon says, here is this woman who is able to repay with good rather than with bad. She is not being reactive to her spouse. She is being proactive. She is looking to be a person who maintains herself, her self-dignity, the person she wants to be, and it doesn't matter what somebody else is doing to her. That's not what's going to prompt her to do in return. Now, this to me is a tremendously admirable trait of a woman, don't you think so? Because a lot of people don't see it that way, you know, like talk about road rage. Road rage is all about you to run, I'm going to do that, I'm going to get you, don't worry, I'm going to, whatever, as if you meant to cut the person off or cause the accident or whatever it is, right? But that's all about reactive, right? Being reactive. And if you think about it, we are pretty reactive people sometimes. And this woman, now I'm not talking about a woman who becomes a pincushion for her husband. One pin, two pins, keeps sticking in barbs and insulting her. We're not talking about that. Any woman who's in that position needs to talk to somebody, to a mentor, to a rabbi, to a professional, and deal with whatever's going on. We're talking about the normal everyday life, the normal, you know, spin of life, where there are sometimes that a husband will come home and he's not acting so wonderful and charming and loving. He's just not. Okay? And you'll say something to him and he's more interested in looking at the mail than at you. He's more interested in looking at the paper than at you. And, you know, I'm sure none of you have husbands like that, but there are some husbands out there in the world that, you know, and he'll say something and you'll say something and he, like I said, grunts a reply and you're not feeling very good about this right now. Right? So it's not anything seriously abusive in any which way. The Torah does not approve of that in any which way, any which level. And like I said, that needs to be dealt with. But just the normal ins and outs of life and how people treat each other. And this woman is able to rise to the occasion and lift herself up and say, I am going to react not with, I'm going to be dignified about what I'm doing here. I want to do the right thing. And it's not going to depend on what my husband's doing to me. And if the Malbim adds, the commentary of the Malbim adds something very fascinating, because it says, Kol Yemei Chayeha, she does this her whole life through. And his commentary says, there are some people, when they're young, and everything's going well, in their honeymoon period of their marriage, they'll be all charming and loving, but as they get older, and things get tougher, and maybe they're not doing so well, and as, you know, life goes on, you're not feeling well, aches and pains, all that, she maintains that throughout her life. It doesn't depend on her external circumstances. And then he says, when financial difficulty sets in, there are some people, listen, hey, if my husband gives me a credit card and says, honey, go out and buy whatever you want, it's all on me, please, go buy yourself that new dining room set that you've been, I wish I could get a dining room set, I have one from 35 years ago, could I please? And he's, sure, honey, here's the credit card, please go buy yourself that $10,000 dining set that you were eyeing. Well, if he says that, and I get a big bouquet of red roses every single Shabbos from my husband with this beautiful gushy note, well then, it's not so hard to respond lovingly and malasutol, right? But what if it's bimei oni, it's financial hardship? He's not giving me the credit card, and times are tough, and I feel the pinch, and I'm like, he can't even bring in enough money to make this work for us as a family. What am I supposed to do now? Nevertheless, we know that when we feel vulnerable, when we're in pain, when we're going through challenges, life challenges, it's a lot harder to be this wife of Klanasu Tova Lora. To act in this way of, I'm not going to be a reactive person. I'm not going to give him back as good as he gives to me. And it would be amazing to see how when a person treats something that way, rather than going after them like this, just like they gave to me. Well, how long did you sleep last night? Do you know how many times I was up with that baby of yours? You know, that kind of thing, you know? Or, you know, this 15-year-old daughter of yours, you know her? Remember her? How many times have you had to have a run-in with her in the last 2 months? And you start making a tally sheet of how many times I did this, and I was like, when you do that, you're in trouble. Let me tell you, you're not really in trouble. You can just kind of, but we tend to do this, but we don't mean to be self-absorbed. That's not where we're coming from. We're coming from, just like I said, vulnerability and tiredness and frustration sometimes and all kinds of things, but we are actually, that is what we are doing. We are becoming very self-absorbed when we're starting a tally sheet of how much I did and how much you did. That's really, you know, sorry, that's really what it's all about. And if we understand that there are times when, yes, our spouses or other people say things to us and they are very hurtful, so what are we supposed to do about that? How are we supposed to deal with that? What are we supposed to do about that? So I've come up with my own particular appliance that doesn't exist. I wish somebody would make it, and you'll see why in a minute. I call it a superfood processor. Imagine if you took 10 pounds of potatoes, potato peels and all, put them into the superfood processor. It would peel all the potatoes for you, output all the potato peels straight into the garbage, neat as could be, nothing on the floor, it's all going straight into the garbage. And then it would take those remaining potatoes, the potatoes without the potato peels, it would grind them and process them and output a potato kugel. Here it is, on the other end of it. All you have to do is put in your 10 pounds of potatoes, put in a couple, throw in some eggs and an onion, and the whole thing comes out as great as can be. Minus the potato peels, right? So I say we each need to have our own super food processor inside of ourselves. And when people say something to us that is hurtful and that is negative, we need to output it. So much hurt in relationships comes about because we internalize those words that are so painful and destructive. But if what the person is saying is not about me, but is about them right now, right, and about their hard day and about their negativity, I don't need to internalize that. And that would go for a boss, that would go for anybody. Well, let me give you an example. High schools do these great productions, right? Very upscale plays where all the whole school practices for months on end. Those of you who have teenage daughters know all about those. Okay, and at that moment, it's the most important thing in a girl's life. Just the most important thing in a girl's life. Okay, so I used to head props. I still sort of do because I can't give it up. But I used to head props and set up the stage, and I liked it to look a certain way, whatever. So we had a dress rehearsal, and the props heads, you know, under my direction, were told this is a rehearsal minus props. We just need a chair here, a table here, but not the whole elaborate setup. Fine. So we get onto the stage, and whoever it was that was in charge decided that they should have had their props there. Now, they were never told that. She started yelling at them, which no teacher should ever be allowed to do, ever, no matter what, but she did. She yelled at them, and in front of other students who heard this, why aren't you girls responsible? Why don't you have your props here? Don't you know that you were supposed to blah, 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 and she's going on. And I was like, whoa, running onto the scene and kind of trying to intervene a little bit with this other person. And then I go to deal with my props heads who are crying, of course, okay? Not all of them, but some of them. And I said, so tell me why you're crying. And this girl says, did you hear what she said? We're not responsible. I said, tell me right now, are you not responsible? And the girl said, no, of course, we're very responsible. We did exactly what we were supposed to. I said, okay, so just output that potato peel. You are responsible. Why are you accepting that she said you aren't? Now, this was a little tricky because it was a teacher who said that to them, so I had to be a little careful with what I said. I said, obviously, there was a miscommunication here. The teacher didn't know, but her words have no bearing on the truth. You are responsible, right? So, okay, it's easy for us to say that, when somebody close to us says something hurtful to us, you never, you always, we all know those are words you're always supposed to avoid, but you can output you never, because that's not true, that I never. It's not true that I always, right? It might be true that I am sometimes late. I might have to process that a little bit, figure it out for myself, but it's not true that I never or I always, right? So I think that super food processor would be a really good appliance to keep inside of ourselves. And some people have enough sense of self that when people say things like that to them, they're like, okay, it's fine, it's okay. Other people really, really get hurt, deeply hurt, right? And I'm not saying that those words can't be hurtful, but if you are able to kind of let it slide and not take it all in and not then dwell on it with the whole approach of, do you know what he, she, da-da-da-da-da said to me, right? So I want to just, I guess, conclude and then take some questions if we have time or if you want to stay for questions. The Mesillas Yesharim, the Path of the Just, the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzatzos, that talks about two different kinds of people in the world. And he says, there are people who say, it's enough for me to do whatever I was, exactly what I was commanded to do. And that's what they'll do. You know, bare minimum, bare bones minimum, let me do what I have to do. And then there are people who say, Lo dali v'meshanit savesi. It isn't enough for me to do exactly what I was commanded to do. I want to do more because I love this person. And the examples he gives are the examples of a husband and wife, a parent and child. And he says, if there is a child who knows that his parent, when they come home from work after a long day at work, and his parent the parent only has to walk in and say, could you just get me something to drink? And this child isn't like, well, you know, like some of them, do I have to? Could somebody else? Da, 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 you know, that type. This child doesn't only go and get a drink for the parent, gets his favorite mug with his favorite drink, gets it ready, and will have it ready before the parent walks into the house because he knows that's what his father or mother will want, his slippers, whatever it is. That child isn't saying, let me do what my parent says. I have to do what my parent says. I'll do it. That child loves their parents, so wants to do more and more. And think about it. The people we care about, you're making a Sheva Brachos for somebody, or you're making some festive celebration for a birthday, or whatever it is. You don't say, oh, I have to make a celebration for somebody's birthday. I'll just plunk down some white paper plates, styrofoam paper plates. We'll just, you know, buy some Duncan Hines cake mix, mix it up, serve the birthday cake, and that's it. Hi, happy birthday. You know, no. You care about that person, you're going to go all out for the person. You're going to have the sushi, you're going to have the this, you're going to have the that. You're going to go all out for this person. You're not going to the dollar store to buy them a card, right? You're going to do something. You want to show your child that you love them. A parent's going to go all out for a child's birthday because I care about this child. And I care about my spouse. And that's what he says. Do we want to be people in life who in relationships just say, okay, I'll do what I have to do. Don't expect any more than that from me. And guess what? You don't have to say those words. Those words are communicated loudly and clearly by our actions. I'll do what I need to do, but don't expect any more than that from me. I'm here for the ride and I'll do what I have to, but Or are we going to be people that say, Lo tali v'meshanit tavesi? I'm not trying to just get away with the bare bones minimum. I want to give to this relationship. I want to give. And I want to be able to make this relationship such a meaningful, real one, and to have the person in my life know how meaningful and real it is. And so I think that the Ramchal, by the way, Lutzato, is using this as a parable of the relationship between God and the Jewish people, saying, do we want to be people in this world who just say, listen, I'll do the commandments, I'll just do whatever I have to do, bare bones minimum, or do we want to be people who say, I want to do what God wants me to do in this world? So if it means I'm going to have more people over and welcome more people and do, no one said I have to do that, but I'm going to do that because that is God's will, that I should be nice to his people, or any of the other commandments, right? Shabbos, whatever it is, I'm not just going to say, let me scrape by and cut off the corners and do whatever. I'm going to do what I can do to bring God's world, make that paramount into the world. So there's a lot to work for, a lot to work for. We went back to Adam and Chava, saw that relationship, saw a relationship of Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel, saw what jealousy can do, and we examined through the prism of Bilam, Harasha, the prophet Bilam, what the negative character traits are, what the positive character traits are, and what we can bring into a relationship. And we should all just be able to, especially in the time of these 9 days as we approach Tisha B'Av, which is all about relationships, which is all about the relationship between God and the people of Israel, which is, of course, mirrored in the relationship between a husband and wife, and definitely in the relationship, but all interpersonal relationships that were so somehow corroded on the inside, because on the outside everybody looked like they were nice and welcoming and happy and all the rest of it. On the inside there was something very rotten going on, because it was about me and it wasn't about you, and it was about you did that, well, I don't think I like you very much. Not happening, right? So in these days as we approach Tisha B'Av, let's make this into a time that we think about the Ayin Tova, the approach of looking at things with a good eye, the approach of looking at things with, what can I do for you? It's not about me. It's about you. It's about us. And let's make this happen in the best possible way. Thank you for being such a wonderful audience. Okay, questions, if we have any. You had a question. Do you remember it?
It's a little bit of a side point. I was just wondering, after this first murder, is there any commentary on how
there actually are none that I know of, and I definitely do not lay claim to knowing all the commentaries on Bereishis, but I have taught this parsha and I don't know of any, because, and actually that would be because the Torah is not really a storybook, right? So the Torah definitely does not gloss over things that happen and will tell us straight out. That's something really remarkable about the Torah. The Torah is not trying to present even our greatest people in a light of can do no wrong. We hear about Abraham's sin. We hear about Moses, right? Moshe Rabbeinu's sin that prevented his entry to the Holy Land. But we don't, so we hear about the things we need to hear about to understand what God wants us to understand, the relevancy to us, etc., or what we as a people need to, but I don't know. We know that after Adam's sin, right, after he ate from the tree of knowledge, we do know, the Midrash says that he fasted for 130 years consecutively. He ate at night, apparently, but he fasted for 130 years, and he abstained from relations with his wife for that equal amount of time. So that was his tremendous desire to bring atonement for the sin that he had brought about that changed the course of the world forever after. But I don't know anything about Cain and Hevel, other than what it tells us, how Cain was punished and how he responded to his punishment. But yes.
I wanted to comment on the food processor. That we are the ones who are responsible and can only control the way that we feel about things. No matter what you do, you're not responsible for my happiness or my anger or my sadness. It's how I choose to react to that.
Okay, and that is really a very important point. And I brought out a difference at another session, that idea of the circle of control and the circle of no control. So the circle of no control is rather big. There are a lot of things in life we have no control over, and that would include how other people treat us, say to us. We have no control over so many things, right? We have no control over our children's tantrums, so, you know, we have no control over our teenagers' defiance. We have no control over a lot of things. What we do have control over, and that's the circle of no control, the inner circle, is we have control over how we are going to respond to those things. And that, you're saying, nobody can smash us down into the ground if we do not allow that to happen. So that's a very important thing to realize, right? And for some people, just like for some people, the rose-colored glasses are like an automatic. Some people don't have trouble, like, shaking off those harmful and hurtful words. They don't. Because they're able to say, well, it's not about me, and I know it's not about me. So, but other people have a lot of trouble with that, so that circle of control and no control. Thank you for that comment.
Thank you very much for this masterpiece.
If there's anything else that anybody wants to bring up, please, by all means.
I just want to remind everybody, first thing, thank you. I think we all love the Divrei Torah with the practical applications in life. I know I could just continue to hear you every night.
Okay.
Tomorrow night in Meet Bean's house. I wanted to know, us groupies will be following this. If you want the address, I can give it to you. It's on the east side. And Larry, about going through Eishes Chayil.
All right. That really, Aisha Schuyl, I could have done for the whole week in Denver. I don't know why I didn't. That could have been a whole week series because it's so beautiful, Aisha Schuyl, but we didn't do it. So,
at 7:30, but text me. I'll give you the address. 7:30 at UETS. UEP. Yeah. And on the way out,